Welcome to Rising Tide, a podcast for career-driven women to find inspiration, find courage, and find their voice. On today's episode, I'm joined by Christina Brady, president of Sales Assembly and host of Taking the Lead podcast.
As a person, what are your stairs made of? Are they made of people's backs that you've walked on to get above them? Are they made of people that you have hurt or taken credit for in order to get where you're going? Or are they made of people giving you a hand and lifting you up?
Christina, on the surface, is a wildly successful sales executive and icon who, over the course of 15 years, has grown a career in high growth tech companies like Glassdoor and Groupon, climbed the corporate ladder to executive levels as head of sales, and most recently, named president of Sales Assembly, a scale as a service company supporting B2B tech companies on their journey to scale better, scale faster, and scale smarter. What we get into today is the story behind that incredible trajectory. And not surprising, it is an incredibly moving story. Christina is a beautiful open book who shares with us how she got into sales, the tragedy that led to her needing to support her younger sister and her family after a tragic loss of her parents. We talk about how she was able to grow her career within Glassdoor and Groupon, the intentional steps that she's taken, as well as facing a reality she never thought she'd have to face when her entire office in Chicago was laid off due to COVID. These are just some of the things we talk about, but Christina is a dynamic leader, a dynamic female and voice, and I know you'll get both laugh, you might cry, but you are most certainly going to learn a ton today. Enjoy. Welcome to Rising Tide, Christina.
My gosh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Oh my God, me too. Sometimes I get onto these and you can feel this energy, and it's so funny how I feed off of the person I'm with. And I just am so excited because you have such an incredible energy. So I'm looking forward to today.
I will mirror that exactly. I could not agree anymore. This, you know, beware everybody. We're about to hit it.
Yes. And I've been warned by Christina that she's not holding back on us today. So all bets could be off.
We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, so there was a couple of things that were really interesting when we got connected that I could not for the life of me figure out, is that how we both spent so much time in sales and sales leadership and in tech. And yet somehow it wasn't until we both stepped away from corporate companies that we finally got connected to one another. I find that so bizarre.
I know. And I think it comes down to the fact that so few companies encourage true networking and peer-to-peer connectivity. The first company that I worked at that actually said, you need to meet other professionals like you outside of this company, was when I was at Glassdoor. And it was toward the end of my tenure there, where it was you have some good ideas and you say some good stuff sometimes, and you should meet other people who do that. And I'm like, oh my God, you're right. Cause as an introvert, you have to force me to meet new people. You have to put them in front of me and then make me sit there and then make me meet them. But we don't encourage it. That was 13 years in B2B tech without anybody ever doing any kind of encouragement to meet anybody. So it just, we all stay in our silos, you know?
Yes. Oh my gosh. Wow. All right. Well, we're going to have to come back to the fact that you're an introvert that has been in sales. Cause I know there's a whole movement and talk around that. And some of the best sales reps I've worked with were hardcore introverts. So I want to come back to that. I want to stay on the networking thing really quick, because I feel very passionately about this. And where I think we've maybe deviated is I'm kind of naturally been inclined towards it, as far as I got to the point where when I would hear somebody or see somebody that spoke to me, I would just reach out and try to grab time. For you, you said you didn't want to do networking necessarily, but when you started to, how did you approach it? If somebody was going to try to do this, what did you find that worked really well for you?
Well, for me, you know, I think a lot of people identify introvert in different ways, but for me, it's where you get your energy and what exhausts you. Mm-hmm. For me, a lot of shallow conversation and acquaintance type relationships really drain my energy. And so for me, when it came down to networking, it wasn't about, I need to meet people simply to meet people, or I need to meet people to elevate myself. It was, I have to build a meaningful relationship with you. And as such, it has to be mutually beneficial. So for me, it wasn't something that was self-serving. It was, I want to meet people that I can truly learn from, that I can build a deep relationship with, that will stand the test of time. And so for me, like the idea of meeting a bunch of different people and like having small talk, I leave those kinds of things and I like have to lay on the floor for 3 hours and no one's allowed to touch me, because I just feel like I'm like, I just did all of this talking and like nothing happened. Like there's nothing built. It just feels shallow. And that's my perspective on it. And so for me, it came down to, I have room for more meaningful relationships in my life. I have the space in my heart for it. And so being very deliberate about what I fill that with.
I love that. And I think it calls out something really great, which is like, it started with knowing yourself. And like you said, where you draw your energy from. And in your case, it's deep. And I very much connect to that, the deep, meaningful connections. When I think of networking, it's so funny because I think of it as how you defined it.
Yeah.
I don't think of it as like the shaking hands, walking around a room and trying to capture 30 business cards, if people do that anymore or not.
I mean, they may not do it now, but I distinctly remember going to like hiring events at previous companies. Yes. And you know, you've got a line of 30 people who are waiting to talk to you. And it's just like, shake your hand. And like, they're all asking the same questions. And like, that's what they should be doing. But I remember standing there and being like, I'm going to do this for exactly 11 more minutes before I go hide in the bathroom for an hour.
Oh my gosh.
That's terrible. But like, so like to me, it very much is just like, you meet as many people as you can and you have all these conversations and you're like collecting cards and emails and like, I'll email you, you email me. But and like, for me, I get so overwhelmed in that.
That's a lot. So now you see the value in networking. How do you find people that you can have deep conversations, or how do you get to a place where you can have deep conversations? Have you figured out a way to do that?
I mean, the way that even you and I were introduced is big, where, you know, there's somebody that I meet that I click with immediately and they say, oh my gosh, you have to meet so-and-so. Like to me, that is networking. It is the warm introduction and people identifying this is a person that you need in your life. So on the one hand, it's that, you know, we all have our hand on each other's back and we're helping each other through and to connect to each other. And then in the other part of it, it's just keeping my ear to the ground and looking out for people who I think can better me and up-level me. And like, I think you're never done learning and you're never done improving. And like, who can fill a gap that I have? So that's how I go about approaching it. I'm also very, very cognizant of not wasting people's time. And what I mean by that is like, of all the resources in the world that are renewable, time is not, and it never will be. And that makes it the most precious asset. And if you think about that, like when a minute is gone, it's gone forever. How meaningful is it, every single person who takes minutes of their lives that they will never get back with you? Mm-hmm. Like you took, like right now, like you and I have been talking for 10 minutes, like it's gone and we spent it with each other. And I feel great about that, but I would never want somebody to spend time with me and give me that kind of a resource and not feel good about it. Like, so I feel this tremendous weight and responsibility just around the portion of people's lives that they take. And if it's going to be with me, I need it to be at least meaningful in some way.
Oh my gosh. Well, so now I think that is a really fascinating time to then have this conversation about how you got into sales, because, you know, self-proclaimed introvert, you have a Bachelor of Arts degree. How did you somehow find your way into sales as a career?
It's like when you're walking down the street and you like trip on the sidewalk and land somewhere and then you're like, maybe I'll live here. Like that honestly is sort of how it feels like it was for me. So growing up, I grew up in a family of artists. My mom was the pianist of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. My dad was a world famous opera singer. And I just grew up just living and existing in the arts. And I always wanted to go into theater. I wanted to be on a sitcom. I did a lot of improv work. Like if you dig really hard, you can find some like super weird commercials that I was in. And like, no, I will not help you find them. But if you do, have fun. So like, it's what I wanted to do. And when I went to Columbia College, I majored in theater and film acting. And when I was getting ready to, plan a move to Los Angeles and see if I could really make it. And when I was 18, my mom came downtown. She wanted to meet and have lunch, which was really rare for my mom to just kind of impromptu do that. And she told me she had found a lump in her breast and that she, you know, didn't know what it was, but that she felt like it was fine and not a big deal. And she sort of brushed it off. Well, fast forward 2 years, it was a big deal, turned into stage 4 breast cancer, metastasized across her body. And she passed away when I was 20. And then 1 year later after that, my dad actually passed away too. And so it was me, my 2 sisters, and both of my parents being artists. The one thing that artists don't get is things like life insurance and 401k and estates and ability to take care of things. So to pay for the estate, we had to sell our childhood home. There was an estate sale where we sold all of our things, all of our belongings. Like I distinctly remember people like going into my closet and like buying my prom dresses for $5 and like just things like that, where it was like my entire life just kind of being stripped away. And then I spent a couple months living on couches and in hallways and didn't really have a spot to go. And I don't define that as being homeless because I had a place to sleep, but I didn't have a place to call home. And my sister's lives were uprooted and we just tried to do whatever we could when we lost all of that. And very quickly I realized I need to make some money. And this dream of going to LA and like that now felt juvenile. It now felt like that is a dream that's never going to come to fruition because I have a sister that has to go through college. I have to pay for my college. I have to find a way to get through life and pick myself up. And this also happened to be right in 2007 during the last recession. So it's like not a whole lot of places hiring right as I was graduating. But the one thing that was crazy was like life insurance companies were recruiting like madness. You know, and so they were like, hey, come and sell insurance for no base salary and no guaranteed income and commission only. And would you like to do that? And I was like, I mean, that sounds great. Sign me up. And I did. And I took all my licensing and I got it down. And that was like my real first sales gig was just like 21-year-old Christina, like selling insurance. And I became a full-blown financial planner. Realized I was good at it. For a while, I was handling the entire city of Chicago's book of business and all of their benefits. And like, I was not qualified to do that, but I did. And I learned a lot and then realized I liked selling, but I didn't like what I was selling. And so that then fostered my next moves.
Oh my gosh. That's a lot to have lived through that. And are they, your sisters are younger, it sounds like.
Yeah. So I'm the middle child. So my older sister, she's 13 months older than me.
Yeah.
And then my little sister is 4 years younger than me. So she was just fresh into high school when all of this happened. And I was in my last year of college. My older sister had graduated college, but didn't live too close to me. And so we kind of were like, I guess we're going to figure this out. And luckily we had friends. I mean, the grace of so many people stepping in, like it was really a true indication of how many people loved my mother specifically, how many people kind of came in and took us under their wing. Like I wouldn't be where I am without some of the people who stepped up and took care of us and like handled the stuff that we didn't know how to or just couldn't at the time.
Right. Oh my gosh. Well, and it's really interesting, isn't it? Because I think, you know, what's coming to mind are like these visuals of like the posters that you see of like, sometimes when it feels like one door is closing, another is opening and that, you know, you're like, oh yeah, that sounds really great. But like in this case, like life kind of to completely was a reminding you that you weren't in control of your world turned upside down. And this thing that you had been aspiring for, it sounds like most of your life just overnight went away. And I can only imagine that you're removed from it now, but I would imagine at the time that was probably a lot to process with just dealing with losing both parents, but then also this dream that you had had and now all of a sudden having this responsibility for another human being at 21 years old. Like that's a lot to work through.
I learned, I mean, and you don't realize it now, because when you're going through it, you're just sort of like, you know, the frog in boiling water. And you're like, this is not the time for learning. But after the fact, I learned a lot about grief. I learned a lot about the fact that everybody has a story and incredible, insurmountable, unimaginable things that they have gone through. And whether they're showing it to you or not, they carry it with them every single day. We are where we've been, and it becomes us. And so I think part of that taught me to be a better leader when I went into leadership, because I look at myself as leading people and not employees. And I try to remember that, where it's like, what am I not seeing? Like when I'm, you know, if you're not performing or your behavior is off, like, I don't look at it in a silo. I look at it like, you know, maybe there's something bigger here that you just haven't had a chance to express, or something influencing it. And so then it goes back to the introvert stuff of just like, there's deeper relationships and there's more to people than you see. Everybody, like everybody listening, is probably like, oh my God, I have this story too. And like, I haven't shared it. And like, if you're listening, you should, but people are so complex.
I love that. I love that. I think the leading people, not employees, that's such a beautiful way to put it. This is a great reminder. I want to come back to that. You know, you said something when you were talking about, you know, selling insurance and financial planning, and you said you learned you love sales, but not that type of sell. What did you discover that you learned or that you loved about sales? What was it for you?
I loved the problem solving aspect of it. I loved the psychology of it, which like makes me a super nerd, I think. But like, I loved the psychology of talking to people, and you have these sort of like invisible barriers, because like, you're a salesperson and they're like a person who's being sold. And it's like, what is that barrier and why is it there? And like, how does who I am or what I look like or the way that I talk like impact that? And like, how does every move that I make change this or like impact the elk? So like, I just got very lost in like the psychology, which is funny because that part of it, I then wound up spending the following decade or more just studying the psychology of human interaction in a professional setting, and like how to identify different behavioral types and your role or your relationship to that person, how that impacts the way that you communicate and how you think. And it's like, then it wound up being something that I got really good at. So like, I took a good thing from it, but it was like, this is such an interesting thing to do. What a weird thing to sell somebody something, like what? And then I just loved it.
You know, what I love about that, and I think anyone who is either in the sales profession or thinking about the sales profession, is like the intent behind it was like your curiosity of like, what happens if I do this? And what reaction do I get if I say this? And it was almost like this grand experiment, is like how it sounds as you're describing it. And I think that viewing sales as an experiment is such a great way to take some of the pressure off, you know, where it's like, it's not a, I have to push this product, I have to sell this thing. Instead, it's like, what happens if, and, you know, and then when you don't win the deal, you learn something from it, as opposed to, you know, you're upset because you think you failed in some way, because, you know, winning in sales is like, if you're crushing it 30% of the time, like you are,
right?
You're really good. You're really, really good. So that means 70% of the time, it's not going to go in your favor. So I love that. I love that mindset of like the curiosity of like, what happens if I do these things?
Yeah. I'm like, ooh, I said that. And you like made this weird face. And I think maybe now I'll not say that to anybody ever again. You know, it's like little things like that, where it's like, if you pick up cues more than just like what you're saying, but like the best salespeople in the world are also the most perceptive people in the world. And like you were saying, the most curious people in the world, and they are passionate. Like I love talking and working with sellers. Like my sweet spot, what I love more than anything, is working with executive sales leaders, second line sales leadership, because you get these individuals who are passionate and curious and complex. And it's just like working with them, to me, gives me so much satisfaction. But like, what a cool group of people, you know? And it's like,
who get a bad rap. Like
they do get a bad rap. Well, they get a bad rap because you can have a great job that people sort of find their way into and the intent is off, you know? And it's like, I try not to tie bad intent to being bad people, but mind frame is everything. And again, the best sellers in the world are ones who have to check themselves every time they don't think what they're doing is helping.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So true. So, okay. So then you leave financial planning and then how did you end up at Groupon then?
So I left financial planning. I had this moment where I was working with an individual who desperately needed help to retire, and he was in really, really bad shape, and he had a family, and his wife hadn't worked, and just looking at what he had saved up and kind of what I was calculating for his financial roadmap. His financial roadmap, it still sticks with me. It wasn't looking good. And I was thinking through all of the products that I was licensed to sell or advise on. And I realized that the first ones that kept coming to mind were ones that also happened to make me the most commission, not necessarily the ones that were best for him. And in that moment, it was like a morality hit. And for me, everything always kind of goes back to, you know, my mom, which is like, I want her to live on through me and my sisters, and I want to make her proud. And I remember at her wake, she had a line of 4 hours worth of people, and every single one of them couldn't stop telling us how much she had changed their lives. And I was like, I'm going to live on. If I can change just one person's life, that's incredible. And in this moment where I'm sitting with this guy and I'm realizing like, okay, all I'm thinking about is what's going to make me the most money. I was like, well, I'm not being true to myself. I'm not honoring the people I've lost in doing this. And so 2 days later, I quit and bartended for a while, worked in retail for a while. And then I, you know, one of my friends reached out and said, hey, you've got experience in sales. Like, have you heard about Groupon? And I was like, no. And they were like, well, it's like you work with small companies and you like sell coupons, but they're called Groupons. And like, you should come sell that. I'm like, okay. So I was like, great, I'll sell that. That sounds cool. So I went and I was one of the early on hires for Groupon. And when I got in there, I was in new business and then worked my way up through leadership and was with the company in leadership when they filed for their IPO and like all these different changes in leadership and CEO and like such rapid learning there. But I mean, it was happenstance. It was somebody who was like, you should come work at Groupon. I was like, okay, sure, if they'll have me. And then they did, thank God. And I mean, and who would have thought that small like conversation with that person would change the rest of my life? That phone conversation of like, you should go work at Groupon, changed my life.
Yeah.
I tell them every day too.
Yeah. That's amazing. So now when you started there, like, did you think you would get into leadership? Or was that ever something that was in your goals? Or was that not even something you entertained?
I don't know that I ever thought of it at that age as being like, I want to be in leadership. Like, I didn't even know how to identify it like that or categorize it like that. I just know when I got there, I was like, so you're telling me that you're going to pay me a base salary. And back then, okay, so this is like 2010. My base salary was $35,000. And I was like, I'm rich. I am rich. I was like, so you're going to pay me $35,000. Per year. And then on top of that, you're telling me that's like uncapped. So like, as I just continue to work and sell, like you'll just keep paying me more. I was like, are you people nuts? And I just went wild. And I kind of realized like, oh my gosh, like all of this is at my fingertips. It's so much in my control. And then I started to figure out like, well, okay, if I'm going to do this, I can't just do it. I have to like be the best at it. So let me figure out how to be the best at it. And like, let me study and look for information and like, listen to people and like the people who are really good. Why are they so good? Like, I want to be good like them. So it was like this like maniacal and probably like super annoying curiosity to everybody around me of just like wanting to get really good at it. And then I got really good at it. And then I took advantage of all the training that they had. And then I realized, well, now I'm in a position, I'm starting to tell other people how to be good at it. And when people were having a bad day, I was like, you look like you're having a really shitty day. Do you want to take a walk? Let's go talk it out. Like, come on, let's go shake this off. And I started to want to lean in to help people more. And then I was like, maybe there's something here for me. Like maybe my path isn't helping myself. Maybe my path is helping others and building processes and like bringing passion to even things that nobody ever imagines you could be passionate about. Like maybe I can find a way to make that passionate. And so I just sort of, I don't want to say I fell into leadership, but it just became like this calling for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think again, this kind of transcends just the sales environment, but some things that you did that allowed you to like become really successful in sales that I think are worth calling out of like, you maintained your curiosity and you were learning, you know, kind of a giant sponge. I love that you were proactive, like taking advantage of the training that was available to you, going and looking to see what were other reps that were doing really well. What were they doing? Like that's very proactive in nature instead of sitting back and, you know, kind of waiting for somebody to help give you the answer. So I love that thirst for knowledge and curiosity and learning, but then also this proactive nature. I mean, those are incredible skills that it doesn't matter what you're doing. Those are really valuable to grow.
Thank you.
Yeah. I love that. And then
you should tell my husband, he always gets annoyed by it because I can't stop learning how to do stuff like all the time. He's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm taking a course on nutrition, or like, I'm looking up a seminar on how to get your massage license. He's like, you want to be a masseuse? I'm like, maybe, I don't know. You never know.
Could be.
I don't know. You know, so in this case, it served me well, but in my life too, it's like, I have all of the, I was like, I have the backup and then the backup, and then also another backup. And you know, just, I can't stop.
Well, it sounds like, as far as the leadership goes, like it becoming a calling, like it sounds like it became, as you were kind of naturally gravitating towards things, like you tuning into things that were making you happy and bringing you joy. And it was shifting, you know, away from maybe like closing deals, but more so into helping your teammates out and helping them with their deals.
Yeah. As a leader, you have to say, like, I have an insurmountable amount of strength, but not for me. It's to carry whatever you need so that you can be successful. So as a leader, it's, you see people carrying these enormous weights and you come over and you're like, I'm going to take some of that for you and make it easier to make your job easier. And like, it's whatever it looks like. Like a lot, you know, leadership winds up looking like being a psychiatrist sometimes, or being a therapist sometimes, or, you know, it looks like pushing people, or it looks like identifying areas that they're not even aware of. And so it's like, you have to care so deeply about your people and the people around you in order to be an effective leader. And a lot of times it means you wear it, like you bring it home. Like when people are in pain, or when people are having a hard time, or when they're underperforming as a leader, you wind up carrying some of that because they're on your team. Yeah. Like their success in some sense is reliant on you. And like, what a huge responsibility. But I like to say I have big arms, you know? So I'm like, let's go. I'm going to get this done.
How do you balance that? I mean, I think for, again, anybody that, whether it's sales or any other role that wants to be in leadership or is in leadership. And you've mentioned the responsibility that comes with it. How do you balance like your self-care, your healthy mental state with that responsibility?
I don't know that you can. I think the answer that I'm supposed to give is like, well, the way that you find balance is to do this.
But let's not do that.
Let's not do, because remember I said, I was like, we're not going to do that. Where I'm like, well, what I do is I do 5-minute meditations sporadically throughout the day. Like if you do that, that's also great. But I think it's accepting the fact that there's not always going to be balance. And if you're not okay with the fact that there's not balance right now, then you have to do something right now to give yourself some time. And maybe there's moments where like, you're okay that there isn't balance. Like there are weeks, months, years where you feel completely overwhelmed by your work and like you have no time. And to me, the balance comes in, how do you feel about that? Like if you are working that hard because you have a lot to do and you are motivated and like you are choosing to work those kinds of hours, then you have achieved balance because you feel great about what you're doing. But if you feel like you are being dragged through the mud and drowning and you're a lesser person because of it, like you're a terrible partner or sister or mother or whatever it may be, well, then you don't have balance. And in that case, you have some decisions to make. So like balance to me is your sentiment about how you spend every day. And when you go to bed at night, like Allison Hannon reminded me, her and I had a conversation on my podcast a couple of weeks ago. And she was like, if you lay down at night to go to bed and you didn't wake up in the morning, what are you going to regret? And if in that moment you say, I would regret the fact that I have no time to myself and I'm completely swamped and underwater, well, then you don't have balance. And fix that. Because just like time, regret doesn't go away either. So actively try to avoid things you're going to regret. So I guess that's the balance to me.
I think that's such a great call out. And this is where everyone is so unique, you know, because what works for you will not work for the next person. But what is the same is that what you can sustain, how do you feel about it? I think that's so, such a great call out of, do you end a day energized, alive, tired, but feeling good? Or do you feel drained? Do you feel depleted? Do you feel empty? Do you feel as though you have nothing left to give? And that's so good to be able to recognize, you know, yeah, there are times that are imbalanced. And I think setting expectations too, of like, there are sometimes they are more intensive than others. And, you know, but again, like kind of going back to like, am I okay with this? How am I doing? Checking in, you know, and if you're good, then you can keep going. And if you're not, then maybe stop and pause and evaluate if that's working for you, or maybe what's not working for you, and maybe what changes you need to make.
Yeah.
That's a really, really good call out. We're going to come back to your podcast because that's I want to get into that because I'm so excited about it. And I love what you're doing. And there's so many corollaries to Rising Tide. Real quick before we leave the sales trajectory, when you look at your career path, you know, I think you've been able to come in to grow and you've worked for a couple of really big high profile companies like Groupon and Glassdoor. Mm-hmm. What would you say if somebody were going to ask you, like, what has allowed you to climb up? What has allowed you to continue to be successful and earn these promotions? Somebody that's wanting to maybe do the same thing. Is there a secret? Is there something that you feel has allowed you to be able to continue moving up and earning promotions?
I mean, what worked for me was I never took a promotion to take a promotion. It was, I have a bigger impact that I can make. I can improve this team. I can improve the company. I can improve this process. Like, I can make a meaningful difference here in this way. And if that position is how I get the autonomy and the ears and the trust to do it, then like, I guess I need to go be in that position. Because to me, again, it always comes down to that, where it's like the moves that you make should be driven by something more than just like, oh, I'm a sales manager now, and I would like to be a director. So I'm going to be promoted to director. Because once you're in that job, if you don't want to be a sales director, or you don't want to be a sales VP and you just want the title, you're going to hate it. Mm-hmm. Because those are big jobs and they are hard jobs, and you bring those jobs home with you, and they are you going to bed every night at 2 a.m. exhausted. They're you on your phone answering emails while your children are there at dinner. There are weekends where your kids are at the pool and you're sitting there trying to answer emails or put out a fire. Like, it is a job that can be all encompassing. And if you're there because you want the title, that's going to be short-lived and you're not going to be happy. And if you're not happy, you're not doing your best work. So for me, it comes down to a responsibility of, if I'm going to work here, and again, I'm going to spend my time here, my non-renewable resource, where is it going to be best served? So every job that I've taken hasn't been because I really want that title, but it's, I want that job and I can do it. And like, I think I can do it, maybe not better than everybody, but different. And like, maybe my different in this case is the best. And then always accepting that you have something to learn and a way to be better. And never thinking that because you have the title, it means you know everything. In every single position that I've been in, I have made mistakes, big mistakes. But I say, we bend, we don't break. And so it's like, be prepared to bend, you know? But that's kind of what it's been for me, is like, I identify like, how much bigger of an impact can I be making? And like, as a sales manager, like, the influence stops at a certain point. And I started to be like, I want to be in that room, because I think the people in that room are making decisions that impact these people. And you know, who knows who can really help these people? Me, because I've been with them. So like, I need to get in that room. And then you find a way to get in that room.
Okay. So can we go there? Once you identify that that role was for you, how did you get into the room? What sort of things would you do to put yourself in a position to be there?
This is where your village is huge. I will say there were plenty of times where while I was in a leadership position, I like didn't have a seat at the table. Literally. I can remember like several meetings where it was me and a lot of male colleagues that were all sitting around a table. And I was sitting off to the side in a chair with like my little notebook, because there were no more chairs. And I was just like, okay. And like, nobody knew who I was. And I was like, oh, by the way, if anybody is wondering, I'm running one of the highest revenue territories at this entire company. And I'm sitting in the corner over here. Just want to let you guys know that is mine. And so one, it was very much learning to speak up, and it was not being intimidated by executives. Executives are intimidating, especially for younger, early on employees. They are terrified because of the potential impact that they can have on their career. And everybody thinks that when you talk to an executive, you have a couple minutes to impress them. And if you don't, then like, your life is over. And one, if you're that kind of an executive, shame on you. But two, they're not, they're people. Like right now, I'm technically one, and I would never want someone to be like, oh my God, if I have time with Christina, I better not blow it. I want to be like, you're not going to blow it. Like, in fact, it would probably make me feel better about you if you did blow it. Cause then we could like talk about like your massively awkward moment, and then like, we can be friends about it. So I think it's finding the people in executive positions who are approachable and talking about what you want to do and who you want to be. Like, if you have a dream or a desire to do better or do more, talk about it to whoever will listen. And eventually you're going to get that person who hears you and sees you and is going to lift you up with them. One thing that I always say is, as a person, what are your stairs made of? We climb in our lives, and what are your stairs made of? Are they made of people's backs that you've walked on to get above them? Are they made of people that you have hurt or taken credit for in order to get where you're going? Or are they made of people giving you a hand and lifting you up? And then whose stairs are you helping? Do you have a hand on somebody else's stair to lift them up? So I always say, like, what are your stairs made of? And so it's that. It's talk about it early and often and to whoever will listen. And if you want something, you have to vocalize it. Like, you have to tell people, you have to talk about it.
Oh my gosh. I've never heard that, but I freaking love it. What are your stairs made of? That is brilliant. I love that so much.
Well, thanks. Oh. I have these weird things I make up sometimes, and sometimes they're great. And other times I'm like, okay, I'm not going to say that one again. And I write it down and burn it. But,
oh, well, we're going to plaster that sucker all right over the place. That's a really, really, again, it's just a great way to think about, I think it's another way to frame, like, what is my legacy?
Yeah.
What am I leaving behind? Am I leaving a trail of destruction, or am I empowering others on my journey as well? And, you know, gosh, going back to what you just said about how you put yourself in a position to earn these roles is, I mean, I just want to double down. I think in so many ways, I just know, even for me personally, these are areas that I have struggled, and they're so important of speaking up and having a voice. And again, you know, for some people that's more challenging than others, but finding a way to do it is really important. If you feel like you have value to offer, you know, something I love to tell people is, because, like, a lot of times, you know, you're self-conscious, and especially for women, it's like, mm-hmm. If you don't say something, what are the consequences? Think about it that way. You not sharing some piece of information, or you not speaking up, like, what happens when you don't raise a concern, when you don't share a problem, when you don't, mm-hmm. you know, when you don't have a voice? And so, you know, I think finding ways to speak up, because that is so, so important, is to be visible and to speak up. Nobody, especially as you move up, nobody is reaching down to pull you up. You've got to do that for yourself, and people will help you once they know what you want. And which is the other thing I love, which is, like, you letting people know what you wanted.
Yeah.
That's so important, because no one can help you if they don't know what you need or what you're looking for. And it's amazing the doors that will open when you just start telling people what you're seeking. So if you don't know that answer, you probably need to start there.
Right.
But then once you have it, yes, share it. Sing it from the rooftops, let people know.
So. And when you get to the point where you have a good idea enough times, and then you start to realize, like, okay, I guess I'm ready for the next thing. And for me, like, Glassdoor as an organization was wonderful about promoting from within and preparing people for their next step. And if you listened and you picked up on it, you could be one of those people who could very easily listen and be heard. But I remember several times as a frontline manager there going and saying, you know, I have this idea for how we could build XYZ. And my director would say, it's actually a really good idea. You should go talk to the director of XYZ about that. That's their decision. And I went, okay. And then the next time I brought up an idea, I was like, that's a really good idea. You should go talk to so-and-so about it. And I was like, I think I need to be that person now, because now I keep having ideas that I feel like that person makes a decision on. And if I were that person making that decision, since my instincts in so many cases are correct, I guess I should be that job. So then my conversation with my manager became about, I think the next step for me is this. What do you think? And help me get there, because, like, obviously that's where I want to be. And now I've identified it. So, like, help me put together a plan to get there. And so it's like also starting to identify, like, I guess that's my next role then. I guess that's where I gotta go, you know?
I love the ownership of your instincts, and when they were accurate, and not chalking them up to luck or chalking them up to, like, oh, well, somebody else. No, like, taking credit for really great ideas. And as they became patterns of great ideas, that ended up being how you knew what you were ready for. That's so great. Ugh.
Thanks. And then so also recognizing when they were, like, not good ideas, like, the same thing too. Like, part of being a leader is knowing when you're just, like, wrong.
Yes. Yes. And I, you said that earlier, and I think that's so good. And I even love, like, what you were saying earlier about, like, be prepared to bend, you know, because I think leadership is just one giant humble pill.
Bunch of Gumbies over here, just bending all over the place, being wrong half the time and right half the time. And, you know, we've got this plan and this is the plan, and tomorrow, throw out that plan, there's a new plan. And, like, you know, it's just, that's what it is.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Well, very successful, climb into executive levels, and then COVID.
Yeah.
So we get to, I think it was April, May timeframe. And one day you have a job, and the next day entire department is laid off.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that, because that's, you know, again, right, this is, you've had this incredible career. You've got a decade of just growth and success. So maybe give us a little glimpse of like walk us through what that kind of period of time was for you right after all of a sudden there was no longer a Chicago office for Glassdoor.
I mean, in that moment, I had never felt so small and insignificant, not in a really, really long time. And I mean, I thought that could never happen to me. Mm-hmm. I thought that I had built enough relationships, got enough really positive performance reviews, had rubbed elbows enough with leadership that just like, it can't happen to me. And the reality is, so often this shit's not personal.
Right.
And this was a good lesson for me where it's like, this shit isn't personal. But, you know, getting the news of getting laid off, and not just me, but my people and my peers and these individuals that I had spent more than half a decade of my life working with and being invested in. And it's like in one swoop, it's over. And I remember I got the news, it was like 6 o'clock at night. And I heard my husband and my son downstairs and, you know, they were playing and I came downstairs and he's like, oh, you know, what was that late call all about? And I was like, I just got laid off. And he laughed and he's like, no, seriously. And I was like, no, seriously, I just got laid off. And I'm the breadwinner in my family. And like my husband has a job and he's employed. But for me, I mean, our entire lifestyle is contingent on my income and has been. And we had just bought a house a year prior, had just gone through a full renovation. I had nothing in savings. I had no nest egg built up. I had just spent it on my house. We were entering a pandemic. And when you get laid off, the first thing you think is, oh my God, I will never achieve the level of greatness that I had at XY. I was like, no one's going to hire me to be a head of sales again. Like, I'm going to have to be an account executive and start all over again. I'm going to have to sell my house. My son's going to have to live in a garbage can. Like, your mind goes to these weird places where you're like, it's over for me. I am Icarus and I flew too close to the sun. And now my life is forever changed. And part of that probably is my trauma from having the floor ripped out from under me once before.
Yeah.
And thinking I have this beautiful little boy who was two at the time. And like, what do I do? There's nobody to help me. I don't have anybody that I could make a phone call to and say, hey, I need a couple of months worth of help. It was this feeling of I am alone and it's on me. And the more shaken I feel and show myself, the more my family is going to feel unstable. Because I remember my husband saying like, what are we going to do? And I was like, we're going to be fine. And then I went and I took a shower and I cried for an hour in the shower and I didn't know what I was going to do. And then I reminded myself that I've been through way worse than this. And I just said, you know what? Go back to your roots. Like, go back to what you want to do, which is like meaningfully changing people's lives, meaningfully changing companies, building things. And I'm just like, I'm going to give myself the rest of the night to feel sorry for myself, like deeply. And I cried and I whined and I like ate an aggressive amount of dairy, which was not great for my system. But then the next day I was like, and now it's day one of whatever the rest of my life is going to look like. And I let myself feel shitty about that. But like, part of my legacy is I don't get caught in the mud for too long. Like, you can put that on my gravestone. It's like, you got me for a minute, but that's it.
Not today.
You know? So, and I just said, all right, I guess we're going to be interviewing a lot. And I didn't realize how strong my network was until this happened also.
Yeah. Wow. I think you paint such a clear picture of that. And it's so real. And even just listening to you talk about, you know, like I can very much relate, not in layoffs, but having been fired, like it's just, and being the breadwinner in your household, like it's startling. And especially when it happens and like, you're not prepared for it and you don't think that it's going to ever happen to you. And I love that you let yourself have the emotions. You know, your bounce back time is insanely fast, but the fact that you allowed yourself to like process the feelings and to be upset and to be scared and all the things, because that's so important. If we don't do that, then it's near impossible to actually move forward.
Yeah.
And so that like you being able to do that is so, so key. And then what's really cool though, is something really beautiful has come out of this, because I think the story of how you landed at Sales Assembly is really interesting. I'd love for you to maybe share, like I talk about strength of your network, right? And like the reputation that you've built for yourself. But then also, you know, you've birthed this podcast as well as like part of this, like who knows if you would have done that if you were still in sales leadership. So maybe, you know, you've made this pivot in your career where you've gone from, you know, sales leader to, you know, working at Sales Assembly and working with sales leaders, but at hundreds of companies as opposed to singular companies. So tell us a little bit about like from kind of this trial to triumph, you've made this really cool transition in your career.
I mean, it's, I think back to that phone call that I got from my friend that was like, you should check out Groupon. And I was like, okay. And how like that changed my life.
Yeah.
The other moment that changed my life again in an even bigger way was 2 years ago, well, 3 years ago now. So Glassdoor was a member of Sales Assembly, and most of the big B2B tech companies are, and it makes sense. And so we used their services to up-level our teams, training, strategy, like you name it. Sales Assembly was like a key resource to Glassdoor. And oftentimes, they would have their facilitators be thought leaders who worked at existing member companies. So the idea is instead of listening to somebody else tell you how to get through the gatekeeper and talk to the CEO, or it's like, let's bring in the CEO of a company and they'll tell you how to get through to them. Like that's a better training. And like, that's kind of what they're doing. So we were using it. And my VP at the time, Stephanie Jenkins, she's now the SVP at Flow Hub and a very dear friend of mine, lifelong friend of mine, as she'll become now. She had always been doing facilitating for some of the new manager trainings that they had. And there was one day she couldn't make it. So she sent me an email and she was like, hey, you know, we have this Sales Assembly membership. I'm supposed to lead this training for new managers. I can't make it. But to be honest, this should be you all along. Like, this is what you do. Because like my side hustle, I was like, yes, I manage this existing team. But I also was like, I've always said, I love working with leaders and like making better leaders. She's like, you should be the one doing this. And I'm like, okay. So she sent an email, introduced me. Matt Green, the CRO, reached out and he was like, we would love to have you. Like, give it a try. And like that email, who knew that me getting introduced like that would 3 years later lead to me sitting here? Because I led a training for them, built a relationship with Matt specifically. I had done a couple of the new manager trainings and I just loved it. And then when I got laid off, 2 days after I got laid off, I was supposed to lead another new manager training for Sales Assembly. So the first person I called on day one of this is my new life was actually to Matt Green, because I said, so 2 days from now, I'm supposed to lead a training for like 50 sales managers and I just got laid off. And do you want unemployed lady to like come in and like train these managers? He's like, first of all, F that. He's like, I'm sorry. He's like, second of all, yeah, we obviously still want you to come, but like, we have this incredible network. Let's help you land somewhere. You know, like you're an incredibly talented executive sales leader. Like, let's help you get somewhere. And through their networking and then just my own, again, my village, I wound up interviewing at 21 companies over the next 3 weeks. I wound up getting 5 offers, which was amazing. And I'm just like, really? Are you sure? I'm kind of crazy. Okay. You know? And then 3 of the offers were Sales Assembly member companies. So I called up Matt and I said, you know, these companies better than me, which one should I take? And he goes, actually, you should come work here. I was like, what? And he said, we are looking to bring on a third partner in the business and, you know, do what you do for individual companies, but do that for all of them. Like, let's give you a megaphone and take what you've done at these various teams at various companies to up-level them and improve the people and improve the leadership and fix broken processes. Like this thing that you've developed, come and do that for everybody over here. And I was like, wow, I think I should do that. And then I did. And it's been like 10 months. And then the podcast came up because Taking the Lead, my podcast is through Sales Assembly. So Matt and Jeff, they are like, we give each other a hard time, but they are two of the best guys that you will ever meet. And they've been unbelievably supportive of me and who I am and letting me fly and spread my wings. And they said, you know, we're thinking about doing a podcast. What do you think about this being something that you host that is women only? And I said, oh my God, say no more. Let's do that. And then they let me have full autonomy over it and the structure and everything. And so then I just took off and started flying because they, again, they sort of helped me have wings there. And that's what we were, it's like, we talked about like reaching in and pulling somebody up.
Yeah.
It's like, they were like, we want to have a podcast associated with Sales Assembly. And I was like, yeah, that sounds cool. And they were like, and by we mean you should go run this and like go kick ass. And I'm like, oh my God, really? Okay. I did.
Oh my gosh. So tell us a little bit. So obviously it's a podcast that's like focused on sales and focused on women, but tell us a little bit more about the podcast. Like what's your vision for it? What do you see it as today? And what do you see it becoming?
Yeah. So it is a podcast that features the icons of B2B tech, the female icons. And I insist on calling them that because I think there's so many incredible women who have done wonderful things. And so to me, we kind of bring in the icons. And every episode is meant to, first and foremost, inspire. Like I want people to listen to it and feel like I am inspired. I am unstoppable. I can relate to people who have had challenges, but I want people to finish listening and take a deep breath in and take a deep breath out and go, I can do this. And I want that. And so then every episode is a little bit of a mix of just talking about their professional journey and what they have done. But then also the majority of it gets really, really tactical. And it's like, I also want you to leave the episode. If you are a revenue leader, I don't care what your gender is. If you're a revenue leader, you can stop listening to that podcast and go do something to better your organization. You can learn something. And it happens to be females in tech and icons in tech, but it's not an entire show that's talking about the fact that we're women. It's like, we addressed that in the beginning. We're like, hey, you're a woman. I'm a woman. You've done cool stuff. I've done cool stuff. So let's talk about product marketing. You know, it's like, it just happens to be elevating these incredible women who so often don't get sponsorship and being like, let's take your ideas and get them out to the world like this. And then along the way, let's hear your stories and let's be inspired and let's keep it real. And so multi-pronged approach.
Yes. Oh, I love that so much. And I think that's why I feel such a kinship to it. Cause that's so much of Rising Tide is about people sharing their stories, women sharing their stories. And it's women who oftentimes are not asked to share their stories, but yet they're so powerful. And I love that you're taking a similar approach in the sales arena of like elevating these women that are doing incredible things, have so much knowledge and wisdom to share and giving them a platform to do that and to create awareness and exposure for them.
Yeah.
How do you find your people? Because I think that's the other thing is like, these are not, you know, women in my experience are kind of like notoriously the worst at raising their hand and be like, hey, I would like to be on your podcast.
Yeah.
So how do you go about sourcing your guests?
There are some women who have said, I would love to be on your podcast. And I'm like, hell yes. But what women are really good at doing is pointing out other really, really incredible women.
Yeah.
And so a lot of our guests have been women who were suggested to us. Like typically we have been talking to women who are in kind of these executive leadership positions. And the podcast is very much geared toward people who are either in leadership or aspiring. It's like the change makers at companies.
Yeah.
So it's been through that. It's been through sort of this, I always talk about like the hand on your back where it's like, oh, I know somebody really, really incredible. But then every time somebody suggests someone to me, I'm like, well, what about you too? Because it's just like, yeah, because so few women are like, I want to. And it's like, we want to say that, but we're so afraid to be egotistical. Like we shouldn't be. And like, and part of it is because people and even other women judge other women, which is like that we could do a whole other topic on like how women aren't doing anything to help themselves in so many cases. But it's like that. So it's like, it's looking out for guests. And so I would say too, that like, if you are an icon and you have a story to share. And by the way, you may be an icon and not realize that you are, and that's what I'm going to help you with. But that's how we find them. And it's probably not a surprise to say that the list of guests is long, which is beautiful.
Yes. Yes. And almost seems surprising, right? Because what we hear so often is like, where are all the women? It's so hard to hire them. And there's no, you know, women sales leaders in tech. And like, you know, you have proof that they are there, they exist, and that, you know, this is such a great way to help pull them into the spotlight and serve as role models for other women of these incredible women that have done and are doing really cool things. And I love that you will, when getting a recommendation, you will then follow up with, and what about you? It's really powerful. And the hope is like, I think for anyone listening, here's my ask is like, yes, I think it's beautiful to tap other people on the shoulder and to encourage them. But when you get tapped on the shoulder, remember, like, that's really special, but that you shouldn't wait for that to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like we are trained to do that from the very first time that we apply for a job. Like, I remember being in a hiring position where I was hiring a lot of people. Mm. Candidates were always so quick to say, well, you reached out to me. I didn't, you know, like you want me, right? And so like, that makes me more valuable. Like, it makes you more valuable if somebody else wants you versus you saying like, I identified this position on my own because I feel like I'm a fantastic fit and I'm going to tell you why. It was, I remember candidates always having to pre-qualify and say like, well, so-and-so referred me, or like, you know, because like, hey, why are you taking this interview? And they're like, oh, well, I mean, you guys actually reached out to me. And I'm like, you say that because you like, you're worried that if you just wanted it, it makes you less valuable. But guess what? You wanting this of your own volition makes me feel like you're more valuable. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give it another try. And like, why did you take this interview? You know, because I'm just like, you don't have to BS me. You know what I mean? It's just
let
like,
me ask again.
Let me ask you again. We're going to erase that. Okay. And let me ask you again, because the answer shouldn't be like, well, you guys wanted me, right? Okay. So like, I'm a great candidate. You guys wanted me. And I feel like it bleeds into this too, where it's like, if somebody else recommends you, you have more clout than if you say, I think I'm the one. That same concept bleeds into why so many women have a hard time moving into leadership. And so many women have a hard time advocating for themselves, because we are taught that our worth is what somebody else views of us versus our own take on it. Mm-hmm. And like, we all have to change that.
Oh, yes. And I'm reminded of, you know, that's part of why I wanted you to go into like what allowed you to be successful in your career. Because what we didn't say is you had people saying like, hey, Christina, I think you'd be a great director. I think you'd be a great senior manager. I think you'd be a great head of sales. You were saying that. You were raising your hand. You were making it known and then allowing people to advocate on your behalf. And I do love that. And it's been really interesting, because one of the terms that's kind of come into my sphere in the last few months has been this concept of human giver syndrome. And that women are particularly prone to this. And I think it's part of what fuels what you're talking about, which is, we are conditioned, you know, and imprinted on at a very young age of like, you know, society expectations of women are to look after others, to be happy, to be grateful. And so, you know, in reaching for something and speaking highly of yourself, you are still sadly defying social expectations, which inherently is going to cause friction and it's going to make it uncomfortable. And you do it anyways, what Christina is telling you and what I will validate, and hopefully what you've learned from anyone that's been on this podcast, is that is what will help you be successful. And so again, finding a way to be able to do it. But I just love that so much. And something we haven't even gotten to talk about much, and we're getting close to time, but I want to touch on is, I think Sales Assembly, I love how much they're investing in women and people who identify as women, both in this podcast. And then you also have what's called the Women's Circle. And this isn't just for sales. This is for tech as an industry. So maybe really quick, I'd love to just have you tell us a little bit more about it, because I think this is, again, just another really cool thing that people need to know about and be aware of.
Yeah. Sales Assembly is like a buffet. And you walk in and it's like all the different stuff we have are all these different dishes. And we have some people that are like, yo, I dig the mashed potatoes and like, I will pay to get into this buffet every year because of those mashed potatoes. And other people are like, I like a little sprinkle of everything, even the frozen yogurt at the end. Like, there's those people too. So like, one of the dishes that we have is the Women's Circle, which is an exclusive professional network for all women or those who identify as women who are working in B2B tech. It doesn't matter what your role is. The reason it's called the Women's Circle is when we get in that room, we are all on the same level. We are all in a circle, and your role does not define your worth when you walk in that room, virtually or in person if we have them. So that's what it is. And every meeting, we first kind of talk about the problem or the topic. And it's like, what is the thing we are focusing on today? And then the first half of it is we're sharing our experiences with it, and we're getting very, very raw. And we're putting on what I call our black hats in that moment, which is like, we're just going to talk about like how crummy this is. Like, we're going to vent it out. And then when we're done venting, then we put on our green hats and we say, okay, now, there's a lot of women in this room representing well over 150 different tech companies of all different levels. If the change doesn't exist here, I don't know where the hell it does. So we know the problem. Now we're going to talk about how we fix it. And we spend the second half of it being like, here's what we're all going to go do to fix it. And just remember, that you have family here in this room together. This is a circle. We are all one. So you go out in the world and you try to do the best you can. And if you trip up, you come back to this circle and we will help you. And so it's building this community that is so much more than just corporate, you know, groups. It's much more so like we are a group of professional women who are now 300 people strong that are going to help others create the change in the world. And so to me, it's a match. It's a catalyst.
Oh, gosh. I love that so much. And I just feel, I just think it's really cool. And I love the approach of let's get it out. We used to talk about this a lot at work of like, I would say like, let's go below the line for a minute, like just air your grievances. It's okay to be unfiltered. We're not in problem solving mode. Just get it out and then come back up above the line and let's solve for it. Let's figure out what we want to do about it. And I love that. It's such a productive time and space to like, again, allow yourself to feel what you need to feel, share what you need to share, and then let's do something about it. Let's not just talk about it. And I, so powerful. I just am so inspired as I learn about different organizations and groups and things that are available that help others connect with one another and to develop together and to grow. Like I just am so encouraged for what the future will look like. And especially in the tech and in the sales arena, I just get so excited for it.
Me too.
Okay. So my final question, you've given us a lot already. And I always
laid it out.
Every time I ask this question, I'm like, man, I am really asking this person to go deep because normally at this point I've elicited so much great insights and learnings and advice. But if you could pick one thing that listeners were going to take away that is either something that you have learned throughout your career or your life that has really made a difference for you, or the best piece of advice that somebody gave you that has just served you so well, what's that one thing you'd want to make sure people walked away with?
I talked about the idea of what are your stairs made of? And I think that's a big one. But going one level deeper on that, if you think of your life as a story, and like every moment of your time, which I've also talked about a lot, that you're spending, you're writing a page. Think about going back and reading the page for today or the pages from last week. Are they the story that you want to tell? Were you being the person that you want to be? Do you feel proud of it? The answer doesn't matter because you can't change the past, but you can influence the future. And so the one thing is, whether it's your personal life or your career or your relationships, you're writing these pages of your story all the time, all day, every day. And like, don't forget to reflect on those and just be like, was I who I really wanted to be in that moment? And if I wasn't, then what did I learn and how do I be better going forward? But it's this constant reflection of how you are spending your non-renewable resource, your time, and making sure that that story at the end of your life, whenever that is, and we don't know, I learned that just like anybody else, where it's just like, you don't know how much time you have. It's a blip. And when it's gone, it's gone. And so is the book that's left behind when you're not here anymore, is that your legacy? And if it's not, then fix it right now, today.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, I love that. And if I may, I put a slightly different spin on that concept, but I love it so much. The reflection both of, am I living out the legacy that I want, that I can be proud of? I love that. And that you can change it. That's so powerful, right? Nothing is permanent. Things are malleable. But then also, you know, I think about women, it's like the reflection piece of like, look at all that you have done. You know, I think if I could iterate on that, it's like, look at everything that you have accomplished. And look, you know, even when you were talking about when you got laid off, it's like, I have been through worse. Yeah. I am strong and I am capable, right? Like you in some ways, like went back and read your story. And you're like, no, that this chick, she can do this. Like yeah. If she can lose both of her parents in less than a year and a half, she can get through this layoff. And I just think that's so, I love that metaphor of a story and the power of reflection and letting it teach us things about ourselves and inform decisions we want to make for the future. It's just such a, again, another beautiful visual that's really helpful.
Oh, thanks.
I love it. I love it. Love it. Ah, Gosh, Christina, I just, you know, again, so grateful that our worlds have come together. I love the work that you are doing. And thank you for sharing your incredible story and your journey. And again, I get so excited with these of where the path will go from here. So I just thank you for being on Rising Tide.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me. This has been one of my favorite conversations I've had in a long time. So I'm honored and flattered to be here and happy to know you too.
Oh, yay. Well, take care. What a fun conversation. What a rich conversation. And at times, even a very heartbreaking conversation. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Christina. If you want to connect with her, find her on LinkedIn. I've linked it for you in the episode notes. If you want to check out her podcast, if you're a software sales leader, check out Taking the Lead. I've linked it as well in the episode notes. And last, if you want to learn more about Sales Assembly or Women's Circle, be sure to head to their website. Again, linked for you in the notes. If you enjoyed today's episode, we'd love it if you would take a minute and tell us what you think. Feel free to either just rate the podcast, or if you want to, would love to hear your words and write a quick review. Last thing, don't forget a couple of other ways you can engage with Rising Tide. We have our virtual meetups. Next one is coming up on Tuesday, March 30th at 12 p.m. Eastern. I've linked notes for that, as well as we have our Rising Tide retreat. So be sure to check us out at Rising Tide Podcast. We've got full story there in Instagram stories, as well as links to how you can get more information and apply to be part of the retreat. Have a great week, y'all.